Isn't parenting fun? Like, you're on a series on Twisted Truth. You talked about the devil last week. Then you come in this week and say, isn't parenting fun? You know, I was thinking about that with the topic we're talking about today. I remember back when my kids first started school, that I think I got tricked because my first child loved school. Matter of fact, Micah could not wait to go. When we took her to the preschool she's going to go to, she ran off ahead of us and yelled, goodbye, see you later, not realizing we had to walk in with her. And she was actually disappointed that we had to walk into her class with her. So you thought, this is how it works. I'm a great parent. Look, I taught my kids to love learning. And then I had my son. And he came along and he had a harder time, more separation anxiety, more of these issues, and it was always rough. But then we got him through kindergarten and thought, all right, this will be okay. But then first grade began, where they're there all day, and he did not handle it well. I talked about this several years ago in one of our parenting series. It was the toughest moment of parenting for my wife and I, because literally he would go, you'd walk him up, you'd stand, he'd be okay playing with his friends, and then right about the time they were lining up, you'd get to see the visible signs that he was getting discouraged and not wanting, and you talk to him through, and next thing you know, he would just throw the biggest fit and, you know, do that death latch onto mom's leg. It got to the point that I had to go over there and walk him, and he did the same thing. And yeah, I'm sitting there being brutal, trying to throw him into class. And the hardest thing was, what happened was when I was actually out of town speaking at a conference, and we thought we were getting close, we started to tell him, hey, when you go, we just laid down what we thought would be some regulations. It's like, listen, we know you can be sad. It's okay if there's some tears. It's okay if you can, but once it's time to walk in, you gotta listen to the authority of the teacher and the authority of us as mom and dad. And if you don't, if you throw a fuss and try to run back and it becomes a problem, we're gonna start taking some stuff away from you. And so he doubted us, and the first day we had taken a couple of his favorite toys and then made him go to his room after school. And in the process that it kept getting worse, I had to go out of town until finally my wife calls me when I'm in another state and explains that this one morning he did it, he got it to class, she left, she had to go back and stop in the office. And while she was in the office, she discovered he had got away from the teacher, ran out, got out the gate before they locked the gate they come in during the day, and we live across the street from the school, so he just ran home. He's, I'm out of here! Freedom! Run, Forrest! You know, he's like, takes off. And so she went home and got there. He had just gotten there. She figured out that she realized he had just gotten home. And he's standing in the front yard because mom wasn't there. And she had to talk to him. And here I'm trying to deal with this over the phone. And we're like trying to do what the thing we know. And we realized we just got to take all of his freedom away. So we ended up taking the point where we cleared his entire closet. He had nothing in there but his clothes. We took the door off of his bedroom so he couldn't close the door and, you know, whittle a toy or something. And then we actually would say, if you throw a temper tantrum and try to run away when you're supposed to go into school, you'll go home and go straight to bed. Mom will bring you a little snack, a little dinner around 5:30. You can eat that. Then you're done. You're back to bed. So literally, think about a first grader. No toys, nothing. Comes straight home from school, goes right to bed. You would think he would crack. 5 days he did that for. 5 days. Doesn't seem like much unless you're there. Think about that, mom and dad. 5 days to break his will. And you know what? It took 5 days for him to learn a lesson that most of us really think when we're kids. Most of us start to get out of that a little bit as we get older. We learn that this is not necessarily true. And that is, he believed rebellion equals freedom. Rebellion equaled freedom. I'm confined, the teacher, I don't like this. So therefore, if I just run away, I'll be free. What we had to teach him, and he learned right away, it took him 5 days to get it through his thick skull, was rebellion did not equal freedom. Rebellion equaled less and less and less freedom. And many of us, we learned that as we grew up. Our parents taught it. So we don't really say rebellion equals freedom anymore. But we've been in this series called Twisted Truth, where we've been looking at how the unseen spiritual world affects the seen world. And we've been talking about how there's a prince in this unseen world that does battle with God, and his name is Satan. He's the devil. And I know that a lot of us are like, really? Really? Well, if you come to church and say you believe in God, then why wouldn't you believe in the devil? Because Jesus actually describes him and says who he is. And we looked really closely at who he was last week. You can go back and listen to last week's message. And we talked about how he has an agenda. It is to kill and destroy and to steal God's glory. And his primary tool is, he's not all powerful, he's not all this, but he is a great liar. And his primary tool is deception. And we've looked at that last week. And we look at how he uses deception. What he does is, he doesn't say, the sky's green. But he'll twist truth. He'll take a truth and twist it enough that it still has some truth, but it's not really true anymore, and gets us to buy into the twisted truth. And then as you slowly take that little 1 to 2 degree off target, go out, he ends up taking us down a road where we end up way off. Well, today's topic is related to this idea of rebellion equals freedom. It's the idea of authority. And how most of us will say, yeah, rebellion doesn't equal authority. We know that if I outright revolt against all sense of authority, I'm not gonna really be free. But where he's twisted, the twist is, we still have a little bit of that in us. He gets us to buy a much more subtle twist. As we get older, we stop saying rebellion equals freedom, but we will do this. We will sit there and we will do this. When it comes to any authority in our lives, a law, a rule, something, we will evaluate the what of that, one rule at a time, one law, one request from authority at a time. We will evaluate the what one at a time. And if we disagree with the what they're asking us to do, we feel free to ignore it. We feel free to disregard it. We feel free to disobey it. And we feel free to encourage others to do the same. You see, that's a slightly subtle thing. But what we're gonna talk about today on this twist is our attitude and response to the seen authority in our lives, the authority that is seen, actually is a reflection of that towards the unseen. Meaning, how I handle human authority directly reflects on how I'll handle spiritual authority in my life. And Satan knows that. And that's why the twist is to get us to challenge the what one rule at a time. If you look back, we talked about Adam and Eve and their story of how Satan came in and lied and twisted. And he didn't say a complete untruth, but he said, hey, if you do what God told you not to do, you won't die. What did he focus in on? The what. He took the what and he challenged the what and got them to disagree with the what. He didn't say reject your relationship with God. He just said, on this one rule, that's a stupid what. And we all fall for that. Now, I gotta tell you before we get in, we're gonna be looking at a passage in Romans chapter 13. You can turn there now, Romans chapter 13. But as you're turning there, I have to confess something. To talk about this twist of how we look at authority, I didn't wanna talk about this. I thought it sounded boring. I thought of all the things I can look at the twists out there, this would be one. Why would I talk about this? As I looked at it, I just pushed back. I go, this isn't exciting. This is kind of, you guys are gonna fall half asleep. Last week, oh, we're talking about who Satan is. This week, I'm like, let's talk about authority. And you know what? I realized I like authority when it's mine. I like being in authority. I don't like being under authority. So I realized I didn't want to talk about this because of all these twists. This is the most subtle because you sit there. The other ones, we're going to talk about pain next week. We're going to look at some things that people are like, that is so obvious. But this little, it is so subtle that we fall for it so easy. And we don't know that Satan's taking us to this ultimate twist that we're going to see. And we fight it. I mean, I like authority, but not against it. I mean, I love seeing police officer sirens in front of me. I don't like seeing them behind me. Right? It's like, yeah, go get him. That tax dollars. Yeah, you're the hero. Ah, man, I hope he lets me off with a warning. you see, and then I realized when I looked at the subtlety of this, and I looked at the passage we're going to look at, I don't like the passage. Because I go, is it really saying what it's saying? So I'm with you guys. I have been throat punched all week long. So you know what's weird is when I'm throat punched, I'm probably gonna be nicer to you guys. But the reality is I didn't wanna talk about this idea, this twist, because here's the deal. The twist is to evaluate the what of a rule or law one at a time. And if I disagree with it, I don't have to honor it. See, I don't outright rebel against the authority. I just rebel one point at a time. But the truth is this. Authority is about the who, not the what. Authority is about the who, not the what. See, where Satan twists, he wants us to focus on the what, not the who. What did he do with Adam and Eve in the garden? The what. Because if he can undermine you and get you to go one what at a time, ultimately he undermines the who. That's the twist. So, Romans chapter 13. Let me give you the background. This is the Apostle Paul writing to a church that he hadn't been to. He wants to get there, but the Christianity has exploded. The gospel's gone all over the Roman world, and it's actually established itself in the capital of Rome, hence the name of this letter, Romans. And there's this burgeoning Christian community that's formed in the very heart of the Roman Empire. And it struggles a little bit because they're living in Rome, this little pagan place, and they're trying, and he writes, and Romans is considered one of the more deeply theological letters that Paul wrote because he hasn't been there, and he heard about them, and he wants to get them established, so he writes a whole lot of deep stuff to them about what does it mean to know Jesus? What does it mean to really be a Christian? What does it mean to be the church? And then he starts going into a lot of practical stuff, and in chapter 13, he starts to challenge them as citizens because he knows that they're in Rome, and he knows they're faced with the Roman rule, and he knows that as citizens, they're going to have to make some decisions about how they respond to authority. And the reason he's saying this is real common is the reason they were even able to practice their Christianity because Rome had a lot of red tape. That's what happens when a country's been around a while. And they had systems, and you had to be qualified as a religious system. Well, they accepted Judaism as a religion. Well, the Romans saw Christianity as just a subsect of Judaism, so they allowed it. And so as they were living under that, the Jews in Paul's day, when he taught, they always knew that they were considered a little bit suspicious because they believed in the one God. Wow, these guys believe in ultimate truth, that there's only one way to God. How stupid are you? Sound familiar? Some things don't change. So they were always viewed a little bit different. So Jews always believed, be the best citizen possible. And then, and now Paul's telling these Christians kind of the same thing. How do we respond to authority in our lives? And he starts talking about what authority really is. He gets theological on it. He doesn't just say, be a good citizen, because that's a good thing to do. He kind of dives in. And what he says here in verse 1 is he says, everyone must submit to the governing authorities. Everyone must submit to governing authorities. Now, he's telling them, you need to submit to the governing authorities there in Rome. But here's a good pop quiz where, you know, the Bible, sometimes we read it separate from history. I love history, so I like to go, what's happening at the same time in the rest of the world? You know who's Caesar right now when he's writing this? He supposedly fiddled away as Rome burned. Nero. You might not know a lot about ancient history in Rome, but if you know much, you know when you hear the name Nero, you think, of all the bad leaders, of all the bad Caesars, that guy's one of the worst, if not the worst. He is actually, this is the guy that decided to burn part of Rome. We now know historically he started this fire because he wanted to expand his palace and he needed this section of the city that's already developed, which happened to be the Jewish section. So what he did is he started a fire and then he needed a scapegoat. He blamed the Christians because he knew the Jews didn't like trust the Christians, so he can blame them and start a whole thing. And out of that blaming, you started a whole repercussion and Christians started to be martyred for no reason. They started to die for their faith. There started to be a great persecution that hasn't quite happened yet. It's a few years away. But think about this. God writes this to them knowing what's going to happen in the next couple years and tells them, you need to honor the authority of this guy. Now, you see why I don't like this part of the scripture? Because what does that mean for us? If he can tell them to listen to Nero? Seriously? I mean, you might not like our political leaders now, but you know, they're not using Christians as torches. They're not tying Christians up in an arena and releasing lions who they haven't fed for days on end and letting the crowd scare as they run and tear them apart. That's what this man does. That's the man God commands them to respect the authority of. Why? Well, look what he says. He goes, everyone must submit to governing authorities, for all authority comes from God. And those in positions of authority have been placed there by God. All authority, not just good, bad, all authority comes from God and was placed there by God. Now, I know what you're thinking, what? And Paul knew that too. The Holy Spirit knew it. So he says in verse 2, so anyone who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted. So he repeats himself because he knows that we're like, what? Yep, now you heard what I said. And he goes, anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and they will be punished. So right off the bat, he basically says, here's the deal. If you make authority about the what, you have every reason to not respond to this authority. But when it's about the who, God has said authority is about who. And what he's saying is, I've established all authority. God created three human institutions that we live in. We have the church, we have the family, and we have government. And here's the problem. When we try to mix up the job description on which is supposed to do what. And so many times we are in an age where we are trying to make the government be the family and the church. And we have a problem with that. But here's the deal. Why did God invent government? I don't have time to go on that, but government was because we live in a fallen world and there's great sin and there's evil, and he invented government to put a check to that. One of the things by us coming together and saying, let's be good citizenship and all the civic ideas was to try to check evil. Doesn't always stop it, it's to check it. See, when you make the government your church, a lot of us younger Christians have done that. You're trying to use government to take evil out. That doesn't work that way. The government will never replace the gospel, but it does have a purpose. And God says, you need to respect the God, the human authority in your life, because the big idea is our attitude and response to the seen authority is a reflection of that towards the unseen, as we'll see. So he says, you need to do it because God has instituted it. He says, for the authorities do not strike fear in people who are doing right, but in those who are doing wrong. Would you like to live without fear of the authorities? Do what is right, and they will honor you. The authorities are God's servants sent for your good. Guys, he said, authorities are God's servants sent for you. He's talking about Nero and Rome right now. I mean, you read, you know, you get on Facebook or anything today. I mean, some of us Christians, we are the worst when we talk about our government. We're horrible. You would think that Nero was king right now. And here's the point. We don't have to agree. We live in a government, we live in a world where we can help change things. But there's a difference between disagreeing and trying to appeal to change and flat out disrespect. And God knows that. You see, when we start to disrespect, we go after the we don't agree with the what, so we try to demonize the who. And then we become very disagreeable. And the problem is we end up by attacking that, you end up destabilizing the whole system in the first place. It just doesn't work anymore. He says these are God's servants. And here's the point, not good. Good or bad, a few principles you can take out of there is God always works through human authority. A lot of us don't want to agree to that. God works through human channels. That's why he created the church. It's why he has government. He will work through human authority, good or bad. He always works through human authority. And the idea is they are God's servants, whether they're good or bad. You see, we called Satan last week. Look at how he's the prince of this world, but a prince ain't a king. What makes our king so powerful is he goes, hey, I could take and I allow this authority to exist and they could be idiots. They don't have to honor me at all. But guess what? I will use what they do. If you trust me and do what I say, it'll turn out for my plans. I will checkmate evil every time in the end. Think about it. Satan came along and he doesn't know the future. He had no idea. He wanted to stop God's son. He would try to talk Satan out of it. The passage we read last week, he tried to keep Jesus from going to the cross, but he wanted to stop him. But then at one point when he dies, he thought maybe he had success. Ha ha, he's dead. Cool. 3 days later, though. You know how many times God takes evil's worst attempt and you fell right into his plan? That's a big God. So what he's saying is, by faith, you got to understand that I will use good or bad authority in your life. Now, I'm asking you to go with me for a minute, because that's what it's teaching. Now, I know everyone has a question on their mind, the same one I have on my mind. What if? What about? What about if you're asked to do something wrong or sinful? I'll get to that in a minute, because I wrestle with that too. And then God gave me an answer. So he says they're God's servants, good or bad. But if you're doing wrong, of course you should be afraid, for they have the power to punish you. He says they are God's servants again, sent for the very purpose of punishing those who do what is wrong. That's the check. So you must submit to them, not only to avoid punishment, but also to keep a clear conscience. Ah, that's the part that started to get me. How many rules do you obey just because you can't afford the fine? If I could afford losing my driver's license or the fine, I could get to California in 3.5 hours. How about you? How many of you would if you could? Here's the problem. That's how most of us approach our faith too. I would if I could. I only don't do something because I'm afraid of punishment. And Paul says that. He goes, hey, I'm not saying this. You will be punished if you're a lawbreaker at some point. But he goes, but as Christians, it's not about that. It's not about not doing something because you're afraid of being in trouble. It's about having a clear conscience, having your conscience clear to go, I am honoring Jesus. By honoring that authority, I'm honoring God's authority. And I'm showing those people that. I am declaring my faith in that. But we often say, well, I'm a law abider simply because I can't afford to pay the price. And here's the subtle twist on it. When we do that, we pass that on to our kids. Let me give you an example of showing authority despite if you disagree. Like I said, my son has always had a little bit harder time with school. One is because he can't keep his mouth shut. Must take that from his mom. I don't know. But he is so good at having conversations. He's not intimidated by talking to adults. All those things are going to serve him well in the real world. Doesn't serve him well if he has a 22-year-old first-year teacher. Because they don't know what to do with him. And you know what? Sometimes he has a point. And I've had moments where I've had to go, hey, the teacher's frustrated, so let's have a meeting. And I had one, and I went and I met with these teachers, and I talked to them, then the administrator was there, and they're sitting there, and they're telling me all this stuff, but I could tell that most of the teachers agreed, and we had a good, but one in particular was just like having nothing to do with this. You could tell, they're done. And I got her talking, and I was like, listen, you're the teacher. I know he can be knuckleheaded. If he does anything, you let me know. I have your back. That's my job. He needs to honor that and respect that. But without him in the room, can I just tell you, the way you approach him is never gonna work. Trust me, I have him way more hours of the day than you. Here's what would work. And her answer is basically, well, you know, it's too bad. Too bad. All of his other classes, fine. You know what this passage is asking you to do? That was so tough for me to do. Jaden can tell that I disagree. And he tries to use that when he gets in trouble. Well, you know how she is. You know you don't agree. And I'm like, Jaden, unless she asks you to do an act of terrorism or commit some other felony, her class, her way. And I have her back because she is the authority. And you know, if you're a teacher in this room, I may not, and the people might not agree with you on anything. Christians, quit shredding the integrity of the teachers you disagree with. We are so mean. You wonder why people don't like Christians. We are so brutal. You want to go rip the teacher apart. You know what? You live in a country, if you hate it that much, put them in another school. But you do not have to tear apart the teacher. I have that teacher's back because God placed that teacher in my son's life. And here's, you know what I told him? The answer is, in life, you're going to have lots of people you don't agree with. And guess what? They're often going to be bosses or spouses or children. And if you can't figure out how to honor the authority within that and learn to deal with it, you're never going to grow up. How many of us are not grown up in this room? You see, that's what God is saying. See, you got to honor it. You got to be willing. I need to teach him something bigger. And that's what God is saying here. He's like, realize it's about a clear conscience. It's about me. It's about the who, not the what. We get so fixated on the what, and that's where the enemy twists us. Because, you know, he gives up another example. This is a fun one. Pay your taxes, too. For these same reasons. For government workers need to be paid. They are serving God in what they do. Realize if you work for the government, it's fun to rip on government people these days, unless you're a heroic fireman or a police officer. Do you realize you're serving God in what you do? You may not be preaching the gospel directly, but God is using the authority in your life to accomplish things. So maybe instead of fighting him and him still using your life, why don't you join in with him and take it further? But see, the more we think things have changed since back in those days, it sounds the same. See, they had to pay their taxes. They had to go. He said, no, we have to pay taxes. Honor the system. I'm not saying avoid loopholes, avoid things that you don't, well, I'm going to pay more just because I feel guilty. No. Do what the law says. But just because you don't like our tax code doesn't mean cheat on it. You're cheating God. Now do you know why I hated this topic today? Because it seems so stupid. There's so many things he asked me to honor that I'm like, God, but you agree with me on this. Why? Why do I need this? This is dumb. You told me to be a good steward. They're not being good stewards. But it's not about the what. It's about the who. And you know why we struggle with this is because the more you have, the more you struggle with authority in your life. And whether you like it or not, the poorest person in this room is one of the wealthiest people in the world. We don't like that because we look around, we're amongst a bunch of rich people. So we always see people that are wealthier. But if you took this slice of this room and compared it to the average income in the rest of the world, if you are on welfare in this room, you are still in the top 15% in the world. Did you know that? We're wealthy. We don't like to be told what to do. This is America. Can I tell you something? I'm as patriotic as they come. I think this is the best system that's ever been devised, how to run a government, a country. But I don't mix my country with my Christianity. I'm not talking about separation of church and state. That's not my point. What I'm saying is too often we mix Americanism with our faith. Rugged individualism is an American thing. It's not a biblical thing. Americans don't like to be told what to do. So American Christians don't like to be told what to do. And the sad thing is God says honoring authority is one of the best ways to share your faith, as we'll see. So it's tough. He's like, listen. So we come to this question. If that's true, the reason we wrestle with this is it makes everything spiritual. See, to say I have to respect the governing authorities, everything in my life is spiritual matter. And a lot of us don't like that. We like to separate the physical from the spiritual. Well, there, as I go to church, I worship Jesus and all that, but this is a tax issue. I go to church, oh, this is an education issue with my kid. I go here, but it's no. There's not my spiritual walk and then the rest of life. Life is your spiritual walk. And we wrestle with that all the time. We like to categorize and separate it. So then we come to this question, and okay, I'm gonna get to it. You get it, because I thought the same thing. So is that saying that if you're asked to do sin, or if someone's doing great sin and damage to you, that we should say, thank you, sir, may I have another? No. We are to appeal. We are to try to change things that aren't right. Matter of fact, we live in a country unlike Rome that we can do that. We don't like the tax code. We can try to change it. But back then, if you didn't pay your taxes here, you get a letter. You don't pay your taxes back then, you got a visit. I don't know, which one would you rather have? And the visit was, hey, you owe this much. We can sell your wife for that much, your kids for that much. And then you're like, finally, they sell everything you have, including your family. You're free to go. But you took everything, but you're free to go. You want to make a deal out of it? Nope, I'm free to go. And we complain. And then he's saying that government we're supposed to honor and obey. But what do you do if they ask you to do something outright sinful? Write down Acts chapter 5 and go read it. The Acts chapter 5 principle comes in. Peter was sharing the gospel, and the religious, the leaders in a certain area, got threatened by it. They didn't want it. They arrested him. Now, here's the thing. Even though he was doing something they didn't want, he allowed himself to be arrested. He didn't run away from it. He followed the authority. They took him in. They wanted to kill him. He was willing to die. They asked him, you shouldn't preach the gospel. And he goes, here's the thing. At this point, I have to honor my God over man. So if you're asked to do something that directly violates what God says, you do say no. But you say no under the context of still staying in authority. So then what they said is they talked about it. They said, all right, we'll let him go because if he's a crackpot, he'll just fade away. If we kill him, we'll make him a martyr. So you know what? The government came to a good conclusion. They actually did, despite being a bad government. God used it. They freed him. Everyone cheered. But they did beat him. They flogged him. And when he went out, he even told him, I'm still going to preach the gospel. If you're okay with that, I'm going to go do it. And that's what happened. They did it until they finally got put to death for it. But they honored the government. They violated what they could not honor because it just went against God's word. But then they accepted the governmental policy on it. The Roman Christians, in a few years, used that policy and they willingly go to their deaths. They won't stop loving. And the reason they started going to their deaths is when they were told as they paid their taxes, they had to declare Caesar as God. And they said, we can't do that. We'll give you the taxes. We'll give you whatever is fair. We'll give you what you ask, but we can't declare Caesar God. So if you need to kill us, you need to kill us. They disobeyed in the context of still honoring the authority. See, we don't. We use that disagreement to fight America. That's what they did. You know, yesterday was my youngest daughter's birthday. And when everybody left, the parties were over, the coolest thing is she loves superheroes. And so my youngest daughter loves to watch superhero movies. And the new Captain America, who's my favorite, and because he was good before he was great. And that's, he's the leader because he's got the character. And in it, there's a part where he gets given an order to not go rescue some people. But he knows that's the wrong thing to do. He has to use his powers for good. So he goes and he does it. So he disobeys. But when he comes back with the men, he reports to his commanding officer. And the first thing he says, I'm reporting for disciplinary action. You see, he may have had to violate something he knew he couldn't violate, but he stayed under the authority as he did that. You see, there are a moment that if you're asked to sin, or if there's great sin going, appeal to the next higher authority, appeal to the next higher authority, appeal to the next. That's what Paul did. He appealed himself all the way to where he finally got to Rome and he ended up getting put to death. But in the process of appealing and staying under authority, he got a free trip to Rome. He got to go all, he got shipwrecked. He led a bunch of people to Jesus there. And while he sat in jail, he led a bunch of Caesar's Praetorian guard to Jesus because they were chained to him all day. And guess how Constantine eventually became a Christian? Through the preaching of the Praetorian guard. So Paul, respecting the authority, even though the what was stupid and unfair, Christians willing to go into and die in the arena for what was unfair, that's what changed Rome. The Jews, they rejected Jesus as Messiah because they wanted the Messiah to come and throw Rome out. And so when Jesus didn't do that, they said he failed. He didn't do what we wanted to do. He didn't deal with our what problem. And he goes, but you got a who problem. And then after these Christians did this, Rome was changed from the inside out by Christians honoring authority that was unfair. Because eventually a pagan society that watched these Christians dying and they cheered at first, as they watched them go unfairly, unfairly, unfairly with great faith, but still honoring the authority, they started to get boos in the arena. They started to say, don't let them die. They started saying, stop it. And the society itself rose up and then the emperor ended up becoming Christian and Rome became a Christian nation, in a sense, that they started to promote Christianity. It changed because of honoring of authority. So yeah, you appeal, you appeal, you appeal, but you stay within authority. Does that make sense? We struggle with it. You know why? Because when we watch this happen, we're like, isn't God, is God doing anything? Is he doing something? And the answer is yes. When he lets us stay in an unfair authority, he's doing, he says, I will do something, whether it's good or bad. Like I said, with Rome, what did he do? Why doesn't he change the leadership? You know what he did? He was changing a nation. You go back in when the Israelites were slaves for hundreds of years to Pharaoh. They said, is God going to do anything? This is an unfair leadership. This is an unfair authority. We are property. This is unfair. Why doesn't God change it? You know why? Because what you know what he was doing? Why is he doing anything? Yeah, you know what he was doing now that we look back? He was making a nation. He was forming his people. He was using that oppression to form a nation. He had a plan that was bigger than what they saw at the time. In the time of Jesus, why do people have such a hard time with him? Hey, if you're God, why not? Isn't that what the Satan tried to tempt him? If you're really the Son of God, do this. If you're really God, do that. If you're really God, do something. And he was. He was coming to die to save the world from twisted truth. You see, God will do things through us when we honor him. Good or bad authority. But did you fall for the twist? The twist that says I can pick and choose? Because when I pick and choose, I will always pick the selfish version of what? Rather than the submissive version of who? That's the twist. But this is where Satan really wants to take us. I said all this to get to the ultimate twist. What I do with seeing authority, Satan uses that twist to do backdoor into the unseen authority. Meaning if I start living my life about the what and picking and choosing and deciding to disregard and disobey what I don't agree with in my taxes, in my work, in my marriage, and if I start just doing that, I eventually will start doing it with God and his word. That's the twist he wants. He will slowly take you around to where what you'll do is, here's how he gets you at first. You'll take a Bible, and I got this old, the old, because that's the first twist. As you start to doubt everything else, and all of a sudden you read a passage like Romans 13, and you go, you know what? The Bible's kind of an old book. It's kind of an old book. There's some really old stuff in here. And maybe that's just the old one. So here's the twist. So do I really, I really don't want to listen to that. That just doesn't make any sense. So it's just a little thing. I'll just tear that little part out. But then you're like, well, now that I tore that part out, the rest of this doesn't make any sense. And you know what? Either does that now. And then let's go into the Old Testament. Most of that, that's Old Testament. That was angry God. That doesn't matter anymore. And then, you know, oh, wait, honor God with my money. I don't want to do that. Oh, do this. I don't want to do that. He's got you. And I have one question. How many of you right now are more freaked out and bothered and feel awkward by seeing me rip pages out of a Bible? Which, by the way, is just an old history book. But here's the question. When you thought it was a Bible, how many of you, that bothered you to level, I can't believe you did that. Yet it doesn't bother you that that's what you're doing in your heart and life every day. Father, I just thank you, Lord, that you love us so much. God, I thank you that you bring us real truth so we can see past the twists. And Lord, I thank you for today's message and a passage that, to be honest, I didn't like. And Lord, I thank you that your spirit spoke to me and said, the reason I don't like it is this is the twist that gets me, because it doesn't seem like a big deal. But Lord, as I start to twist my view of authority, I don't want to listen to what the church asks me to do, because who are they? I want to cheat on my taxes. I want to cheat at my business. They're unfair to me anyways. I'm going to take stuff. My spouse doesn't really support me, so I'm just going to go do my own thing. Lord, as you use that twist and it gets planted in our lives, eventually it'll come back to we'll shake our fist at you. And we'll pick and choose what we're going to listen to or not listen to. And in the end, we'll be creating a God that's in our image instead of us living out the image that you created in us. So God, help us to see that twist. And I pray anyone here who's struggling with this, that they would go away not just convicted, but would go away with a conviction to call out truth into the twists and have the courage to trust you in making it right. That's my prayer of blessing and anointing over everyone here, including myself. And I pray this in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen.